The Mishnah tells us in the end of Maseches Tanis there were no happier days for the Jewish people than Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippurim is one of the two happiest days of the year. For us, it is especially so when it falls on Shabbos, because that gives us a Monday between Yom Kippur and Sukkos to address some words to the Chag of Sukkos. A central theme, one that features very prominently with regard to the Chag of Sukkos, is that of Hidur Mitzvah. It's in the air, Mahadrin. And interestingly, with regards to the Arba Minim, this features in two areas. Firstly, of course, is the beauty of the Minim themselves. Esrog Noir, Lulav Noir, everyone is in search of the perfect Esrog, that they should be Mehudarim. A second aspect, which is explicitly identified as stemming from Hidur Mitzvah, relating to the Arba Minim, is that of Igud, of binding them together, as we do, the three of the four, that is to say. Strictly speaking, it's not a critical halachic requirement, but we always do. And the Gemara states in Maseches Sukkah and Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis that the reason why we bind them together, not that it would render the mitzvah disqualified, but nonetheless it quotes the classic source for the idea of Hidur Mitzvah, Ze Keli Va'anvehu. Ze Keli Va'anvehu, words that were said originally within the context of Az Yashir, become darshaned by the Gemara as Hisna'e Lefanav B'mitzvahs. To beautify the mitzvahs, as the Gemara states in Maseches Shabbos and Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel, Tzitzis Noir, Sefer Torah Noir, Shofar Noir, everything should be just right. More than just right. And part of this category is the binding together of the Arba Minim. But it's for that reason, says the Gemara, that if a person, imagine, I've never seen this, because Yisrael Kadoshim Heim, but imagine someone who had the Arba Minim and they weren't bound together. He doesn't need to be asked to leave shul because the mitzvah has been performed. What he's missing is the hidur mitzvah of having them together. Okay, but strictly speaking, halachically, we should know the Arba Minim, one would fulfill the mitzvah even if they weren't bound together. Moreover, and this is not so well known, again, because we never do this, but strictly speaking, one could fulfill the mitzvah of Arba Minim even if they were not all taken in hand at the same time. If they were taken one after the other, first pick up the lulav, put it down, the esrog, put it down, one after the other, one is still yotze the mitzvah. With one condition, says the Shulchan Aruch, based on Rishonim. The four species don't have to be taken in hand together, but they do need to be in front of you as you take them one by one. Very interesting. That much, they need to be four of them. They need to all be on the table in front of you, whatever it is. If they are, you can pick them up one by one. If they're not there, then one would not fulfill the mitzvah. That is the lowest threshold of Arba Minim. If they're all there, you can pick them up one by one. But they have to all be there. I mentioned, in the interest of Simchas HaRegel, that I believe this idea is alluded to by the Torah itself. The Vilna Gaon, on a number of occasions we've quoted his words, gives us to understand that the Tame HaMikra, what's known as the trop or the cantillation, those notes that accompany the words, they're there not only for pure musical purposes, to know where to start and where to stop, but they also function sometimes as a form of a commentary to the words, which is a fascinating new dimension now. The tam e hamikra give tam in the sense that they give reason, not only that they do they give musical guidance. Based on this principle of the Vilna Gaon, if we consult the pasuk in the Torah, which is the source of the mitzvah of Arba Minim, which begins, as we know, ulekachtem lachem bayom harishon, pri etz hadar kapos tamarim, etc., etc. The first four words, Ulekachtem lachem bayom harishon, which are in the laning for the first day of Sukkot. If one looks at the Tame and Mikra on those four words, you will see that on the words of Lekachtem Lachem, you have what's called the Kadma Va'azla, those two crescents that are facing upwards and inwards toward each other. Ulekachtem Lachem. Kadma Va'azla. Then, accompanying the words Vayom HaRishon, you have what's called Munach Revi'i. And anyone who knows their Tame HaMikra, those are well-known Ta'amim. Well, the words Kadma Va'azla have a meaning. The Aramaic, of course, but Kadma Va'azla means to go first, to go forward and go first. Kadma is to proceed, Kodem, Azla is to go, to proceed and to go. Munach Revi, it means placed is the fourth. I think these Tamei HaMikra essentially are communicating the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Kadma Va'azla, one doesn't have to take all of the Arba Minim together. One can take them one by one. Kadma Va'azla, you can take one as you go, one before the other. With one condition, Munach Revi. All four of them have to be placed in front of you. Those are the words of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. Lekemide de la remise ba'araisa. Now the classic example, discussion of Hidur Mitzvah actually takes place in the third chapter of Maseches Sukkah, what's called Lulav HaGozel. It describes all of the disqualifications that could potentially exist within the Arba Minim, and Lulav HaGozel is possible, the stolen Lulav, Vehayovish, and a dry Lulav. How dry is dry? That's a machlokus, they're actually dry shittas. But whenever it reaches that critical point, it's considered to be lacking in Hidur, and it's disqualified. What is the source of this disqualification? Rashi, in the Mishnah, comments, perhaps not surprisingly for us with the background, this says Rashi, the Torah says, Zeh keli va'anvehu. Hisno elefon of the mitzvahs. One needs to beautify the mitzvahs. This isn't beautiful, it's a dry lulav. So Zeh keli va'anvehu is enough to disqualify the lulav hayovish. Tosfos, however, are very upset with this explanation, and we already should know why. For we have seen that the general principle of Zeh Keli Va'anvehu is enough to generate a mitzvah, a requirement of Hidur Mitzvah, but it's not enough to disqualify something if should that be lacking. We saw that with regards to Igud. In terms of putting the Arba Minim together, should one do so? Yes. Why? Hidur Mitzvah. What's the source? Zeh Keli Va'anvehu. And if one did not perform this Hidur, it's also kosher. So we see the lack of Hidur doesn't disqualify. And that being the case, if Lulav Hayovesh, if all we have to go on is the general theme of Zeh Keli Va'anvehu, so lacking that, shouldn't be disqualified. But the Mishnah says, Possel! How can it be? That's Tosfos' question on Rashi, and it's for that reason that Tosfos part ways with Rashi and explain that generally speaking throughout the Torah, lack of Hidur, no. One misses out, but it's still kosher. Yeah, Arba Minim are exceptional. There's something special in Arba Minim, and the reason why is because the Torah itself defines, firstly, one of the Arba Minim as pre-Eitz Hadar. And Hadar, with its many meanings, also incorporates that it should be beautiful. It's part of the definition or the translation of the word. So whereas Hidur Mitzvah may be a value in mitzvahs generally, it is critical in Arba Minim specifically because they are called by the Torah Pre-Eitz Hadar. And there is then a halachic equation, a hekesh between the Esrog and the other Minim. That's why if it's important in all mitzvahs, it's crucial in Arba Minim. All mitzvahs, Zeh Keli Va'anvehu, Arba Minim, Hadar, comes into its own. What about Rashi's position? Rashi doesn't go away, even when Tosfos has a question. Rashi cited the source as Zeh Keli Va'anvehu, but Tosfos asked, that won't disqualify. It serves to beautify when it's there, but not disqualify when it's absent. How can Rashi identify this as the source? And one of the Rishonim and one of the Acharonim say exactly the same thing. the Sfasemes in his commentary to Maseches Sukkah, and it's also a Me'iri. It's very interesting. The Me'iri was actually a relation for centuries. From shortly after the what time that it was written, volumes were discovered in the 1800s. There were many Acharonim who independently propounded Chidushim that were subsequently found to be in the Me'iri. There's a law of statistics, that one out of every number of the good things in life will ultimately be found to be a Me'iri. And this is one of those cases. Says the Sfasemes and the Me'iri, there are two levels of lack of Hidur. There's the milder level, shall we say, where if you had it, it would look nice. And if you don't, it still looks okay. It doesn't have that added element to it. Okay, so it's without the added element. It's what, shall we call, neutral. It's okay. It's balabatish. Even if it's not muhudar. For example, the Gemara's case of Igud. If you put them together, very nice. If you take them separately, also nice. Just not very nice. That won't disqualify. However, Lulav Hayovesh is more than just missing the added extra. It's actually heading in the opposite direction. It's antithetical to Hidur. It's not just lacking Hidur, it's anti-Hidur. Or to maybe formulate it slightly more succinctly, if the normal case that the Gemara speaks about is that it's lacking something special, the dry Lulav is especially lacking something. It is heading in the opposite direction. It's unsightly. And therefore it's almost a violation of the idea of Hidur Mitzvah, and that indeed can disqualify. One is in minus, so to speak. Minus Hidur. And this, interestingly, is the way the Me'iri explains the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi has an explanation of why the dry lulav is possible. Unbelievable. It adduces the pasuk in Halel. What's wrong with a dry lulav? Says the Yerushalmi, quoting Halel. Lo ha-meitim yehalelu ka. The dead can't praise Hashem. And that's really what it is. It's a dead lulav. Of all the psukim in Halel to have attached, that's one of the ones one would like to avoid. But that's the lulav hayovish. And the Me'iri explained, that's really what the Yerushalmi is saying, that it's contrary to Hidur. It's unseemly. Therefore, even Zekei Levan Veyu would say there's a disqualification here. Okay, so this is the classic dispute between Rashi and Tosfos. Why is the dry lulav disqualified? Now, when we come back to Igud, to putting the Avraminim together, which of course we do, the Shulchan Aruch has an interesting stipulation, and I'm not sure that it is so well known. The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Tafresh Nun Aleph Seif Aleph says, when you bind the Lulav and the Hadassim and the Rabbis together, they have to be bound together with what's called a Kesher Kaful, a double knot, no less. For example, not with a bow. What's the nature of this stipulation? A double knot versus a bow? Says the Shulchan Aruch, if you know your Hilchos Shabbos, a double knot is considered capable of enduring. That's a kesher. A bow is considered to be transient, and therefore, in order to really bind them together, it should be with a double knot. Okay. Interestingly, this raises questions with regards to the time-honored institution called the Koishikol, which is that receptacle made painstakingly out of lulav leaves, and then you can put the adassim in. It's a lot of things, but it's not actually binding them together with a double knot. And this could potentially threaten to throw the koishikol business out of business, which would free most of the children to help around the house. In fact, the Mishneh Berurah states that it is enough, and he explains how it could be considered to be the equivalent of a kesher kaful, a double knot, so the kosher kol can stay. But nonetheless, Mefarshim ask, what is behind the requirement that the way that you bind them together must be with a double knot? A double knot is a halach in Hilchos Shabbos. It's very important for Hilchos Shabbos because kosher is one of the 39 halachos of Shabbos. If you're making tzitzis, you need to know. Ukshart, right? The kshir of a tzitzis, you need to know. It's a double knot. But there's no concept of kosher by the lulav. There's the concept of hammering them together. It looks nice together. Why am I concerned as to whether they're together permanently? No one wants them to be together for more than 7 days anyway. And moreover, I think it's fair to say, this is not in any way, with no disrespect to double knots, they don't look particularly nice. A bow looks nice. When you describe something being done in a nice way, you say it has a bow on top. No one says this will be performed with a double knot on top. And that's because the bow looks nicer. So why am I going for the thing that doesn't look as nice? I thought we were involved in the concept of Hidur Mitzvah. That is the Shaila. We seem to have brought together two areas of halacha that are not related. Dare we say it? Ma Kesha. The Avnei Nezer explains, and it's a fascinating new vista into the discussion of Hidur Mitzvah. When we talk about Hidur Mitzvah in our consciousness, we understand that one beautifies the mitzvah. Again, the examples mentioned in the Gemara, the shofar should be nice, and the tzitzit should be nice, and the lulav should be nice. It's all true. To beautify the object of a mitzvah. A mitzvah actually comprises two things. There is the object, but then there is the action of the mitzvah. I mean, the object is there, but then what does one do? There's the performance of the mitzvah with that object. And now, says Avnei Nezer, we need to consider that when we talk about Hidur Mitzvah, there are two branches of Hidur Mitzvah. The branch that we normally speak about is beautifying the object of the mitzvah, quite so. But there is a second track, channel, within Hidur Mitzvah, which is about beautifying the act of the mitzvah. That's also important. That's also a Hidur. To do the mitzvah behidur means to do the to perform the mitzvah as best as possible. Not just to perform the mitzvah with as beautiful a mitzvah object as possible. It sounds very reasonable. And indeed we have examples of this, certainly in the Rishonim. Some of them are very interesting. We'll quote one or two. The halacha states, Arvei Psachim, we don't eat too much in the afternoon. Why not? In order that when we come to eat matzah, it will be with an appetite. Kedei sheyochal matzah l'te'ovah. Okay? Why is it important to eat matzah with an appetite? Says Rashi, Mishum hidur mitzvah. That's the way to do the mitzvah. Not when you're not hungry. It's technically considered an act of eating. But to eat with an appetite, it's a better way of doing the mitzvah. And that's a chiddush, by the way, because the hidur is in the hunger. But nonetheless, we see that the concept of hidur accrues not only to the mitzvah, the object of the mitzvah. The matter will be as round regardless of whether you're hungry or not. But to eat with an appetite is hidur mitzvah. It's hidur in the action of the mitzvah. Similarly, just our second example, Chanukah. The basic mitzvah is one light for everyone. And in the Mahadrin, everyone lights. Ner lekol echad ve'echad. Which according to the Ramah means each person lights for themselves. Why is that called Mahadrin? Rabbi Kiva Eger explains the position of the Ramah, which is again Minag Ashkenaz, that the basic mitzvah, which we never see, just one light for the entire household, how does everyone fulfill their mitzvah with one person lighting? Somehow, apparently, he's motzi them. That's okay, it can be done. But then there's a Hidur. And what is the Hidur? The Hidur is that each person of each member of the household elects not to have the head of the household be motzi them. They want to do the mitzvah themselves. That's called Mahadrin. That's a Hidur mitzvah. Now again, we're not discussing the nature of the lights or the beauty of the lights. We're discussing one thing only. Will I have someone else do the mitzvah for me, or will I try and do the mitzvah myself? And if I do the mitzvah myself, it's a Hidur mitzvah. That's a Hidur in the act of the mitzvah. It's a fascinating new niche within Hidur Mitzvah. Similarly, says the Avnei Nezer, it may be a chiddush, I don't know. We have mentioned that it's a mitzvah for all the Arba Minim to be bound together. Why? Perhaps we may have understood, because we didn't see there was another way to understand, that when they're all together, it looks nicer. Does it look nicer? I don't know. I'm not sure anymore. Says Avnei Nezer, binding together the arba minim isn't, it's hidur mitzvah, but it's not to make those three minim look nicer. Rather, the Torah says, ulekachtem lachem, which sounds that the ideal way is to take them all at once, to take them all together. A hidur within the taking them together is for them to be bound together. That way, when you take that group of three, it is an absolute togetherness as you take them. It's a lekicha achas. So this is another example, according to the Avnei Nezer, where the hidur here, unlike the beauty of the esrog and the beauty of the lulav, which are clearly in the object of the arba minim, but the binding them together is about the act of taking them together. And in fact, Rashi seems to say this explicitly in his commentary to Maseches Sukkah, Daf Lamed Zayin Amid Beis. Rashi describes aguda achas, it's one bundle, lihios lekicha achas, so that it's one taking. Rashi clearly identified the issue here as the act of taking. So together, then the mitzvah is a better act of a mitzvah. And therefore, says Avnei Nezer, we understand why the Shulchan Aruch says, if you want to make them together, it should be a double knot. Because a double knot, we asked, the permanence, does that make them look nicer? No, a bow would make them look nicer. But here, the igud is not about looking nicer. Rather, it's about them being together. If they're permanently tied together, they're all the more together. That's where the Shulchan Aruch's insistence comes from. So these are some of the highlights from the sugya of Hidur Mitzvah, which will be Halacha Lamaisa for us in just a few days. Now, as we turn to the mitzvah of Yeshiva Sukkah, Basukkah Teishu Shivas Yomim, and the Torah states, Leman Yadu Derasechem, what's it all about? In order that your generations will remember, Ki Basukkah So Shabdes Bnei Yisrael, that Behotzio Same Eretz Mitzrayim. When you left Mitzrayim, you sat in Sukkos. Okay, so we sit in Sukkos to remember the Sukkos that we were in. What were those Sukkos? What are we commemorating? Well, as we know, this is a subject of a well-known machlokas, Tanoim. Dispute amongst the Tanoim between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, no less. What are Sukkos? What are we commemorating? Rabbi Akiva says, Sukkos mamish. Sukkos, huts. It sounds like it means Sukkos. That's what it means. We sit in Sukkos, in booths, to remember the Sukkos that we sat in. Rabbi Eliezer says that the Sukkos we're commemorating are the Anane HaKavod. I think it's a well-known machlokas, but it's just fascinating to restate it, to hear these two opinions. The Pasuk says Sukkos, Rashi says Sukkos, Rabbi Eliezer says Anane HaKavod. If he just takes off, and it's that's what we're commemorating. Interesting to note, before we get into the machlokas itself, Rashi, in his Perush and Parshas Emor, and we know that Rashi, his guiding light is Pshuto Shel Mikra. That's what it's all about. It may not always be in accordance with the halacha. That's okay. Sometimes the pshat and the halacha are not the same, right? They're both complementing each other. And here, when the Torah says Basuko Soshavti, says Rashi, Elu Anane HaKavod. That's one for the books. Rashi is aware that there are two possibilities in front of him. Either Sukkah means Sukkos, or it means Anane HaKavod. And Rashi goes for Anane HaKavod. And everyone is now in disarray. After all, regardless of what may be the background for the interpretation, halachic interpretation, but the pshat certainly must have been Sukkos mamish. Why does Rashi give the pshat as Anane HaKavod? That's an interesting shaila. And Mefarshim explain that Rashi is sensitive to the Pasuk in a way that perhaps we are not. If we would translate, we would say, we sit in Sukkos because Hashem allowed us to sit in Sukkos. The Pasuk doesn't say that. The Pasuk says, Leman yidu derasechem ki basukos hoshavti. Basukos is translated not as Sukkos, but as in the Sukkos. The patach under the beis is the hei hayadia. Ba is beha. That means that the Pasuk is not referring to Sukkos generally. It's referring somehow to something significant. The Hei HaYadiyah, the known article. well, this is the first we hear of the Hatz. And that's where Rashi says it's a pasuk, says basukos. It's giving you to understand these are not sukos, but the enclosures of which we have spoken. That's Anane HaKavod. And that's pshat. It's very interesting to what we would presume to be the case, and then we look closer, sometimes we find the opposite is true. So this is the well-known machlokas, Hatz versus clouds. What is the sukkos that we are commemorating? It's interesting to consider, does it make a difference? Now, practically, does it make a difference? I don't know if anyone's sukkah looks different. What one couldn't tell by looking at someone's sukkah that they paskin that it's a zecha anane hakavod. The requirements, dimensions, specifics of every sukkah are the same regardless of what they are a zecha for. Even if it's anane hakavod, we don't sit in a cloud, we sit in a sukkah. So does it make a difference? Is there a nafkamina? Interestingly, there is. It's a halachic machlokus. How so? The Bach, in three places in his commentary, discusses that there are three mitzvahs whereby the Torah itself not only tells you to do the mitzvah, but it tells you what it's for, what the purpose of the mitzvah is. Of those three, the one that we will focus in, because it's our discussion, is sukkos. The Torah says, basukkos hoshavti, and then tells you why. Lema'an, in order, she'du derasechim ki basukkos hoshavti. If the Torah just tells you to do the mitzvah, all you really have to do is the mitzvah. But if the Torah tells you the mitzvah and tells you what it's meant to promote, the awareness and recognition and remembrance it's meant to promote, part of the mitzvah is to know what you are remembering. And now it becomes a material machlokas as to what the sukkos are lezeche. According to Rabbi Eliezer, when one sits in the sukkah, he should be remembering the Anane HaKavod. That's part of the fulfillment of the mitzvah. For Rabbi Akiva, he should be remembering sukkos mamish. So not only is it a historical or parshanut question, it's a halakha question. And indeed, that is why the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch both discuss this, even though their works are halachic works. But nonetheless, it's part of the halacha. You need to know what it's lezecher as part of the mitzvah. Now, if we take a step back, consider these two. So closer to the pshat, we think, or we used to think, is sukkos mamish. Perhaps. And someone certainly says it. Rabbi Kiva says it. But the question is, remember, we're making a festival over this. I mean, there's a chag about this. There's a mitzvah to remember, basukkos hoshavti. And when you put it in that way, and you consider the two possibilities, remember, what am I to remember? There's two options. Anane HaKavod and Hatz. And Mefarshim raised the question, why are we making a festival out of remembering Hatz? If you remember that we sat in Hatz when we were in the Midbar, and the conclusion is, therefore, there should be a seven-day festival over that, that's a very optimistic outlook. To celebrate sitting in Hatz, I don't know. Anane HaKavod is already something else. So how do we understand if Sukkos or Sukkos Mamish, the Torah, would make a chag and a mitzvah about this? Rashbam discusses this, Rashi's grandson. And he says something very interesting. It's quite a chiddush. He understands the pshat of Sukkos is Sukkos, Hatz. Why is it a mitzvah to remember we sat in Hatz when we left Mitzrayim? What was so amazing about that? Says the Rashbam, nothing. That's why we need to remember it. Sukkos is Chag HaAsif. It's the final, it's the culmination of the gathering of the agricultural year. When the harvest comes in, that's a time where a person would be forgiven for having a certain feeling of kochi v'otzem yadi, he's very happy with himself, and he may forget. Sometimes this happens, as the pasuk says, v'ram levavecha v'shachachta. At the special times, we forget. We could forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu. During difficult times, we remember. When times get better, sometimes we forget. And therefore, says the Torah, when you bring the harvest in, and God willing, it should be a good, bountiful harvest, Remember where it came from. And remember where you came from. Sit in Sukkos to remember the contrast. HaKadosh Baruch, you used to be nowhere, literally, in a very, very transient existence, not on your own land. HaKadosh Baruch, we brought you into Eretz Yisrael. So, Chag HaSukkos, according to this, is about thanksgiving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for having really brought us into our own land. One could almost say, I hope this is not too an extreme way to say it, because the Arba Minim really are the Hoda'ah for Eretz Yisrael. They grow by water, that's the point. We came from the desert to a place of water, says Rambam and Abarbana. It's fair to say that in terms of coming into Eretz Yisrael, the relationship of Sukkah to Arba Minim is like on Pesach, the relationship of Morah to Matzah. As surely and as in terms of our liberation, when we're free, remember how things used to be in order to appreciate it. So when we come into Eretz Yisrael with the Arba Minim are our Matzahs, says the Torah, but remember Sukkos in order to appreciate that transition from Sukkah, where you were nowhere, to Eretz Yisrael, which is the ultimate somewhere. That's how the Rashbam explains Al Derech HaPshat. If Sukkos is Sukkos Mamish, that's what it's about. So we're not celebrating the fact that we sat in Sukkos. We're remembering it in order to celebrate the fact that we came into Eretz Yisrael. And this explanation of the Rashbam will also explain, although he doesn't make an issue of it, but obliquely he's dealt with the question, which is the famous question of the Torah. If we sit in Sukkos in order to remember that when we left Mitzrayim we sat in Sukkos, well, when did that happen? When did we begin to sit in Sukkos? Essentially when we left Mitzrayim. We weren't nowhere, we weren't sleeping under the stars for 6 months. So, if we're looking to commemorate when we first sat in Sukkos, it's essentially when we first left Mitzrayim. So now the question is, so why doesn't Sukkos fall on Pesach? Which could be the ideal solution for Pesach cleaning. In some homes, the two could work very well together. And somehow, it doesn't go. Ein ma'arim simcha b'simcha. Okay, somehow, we began to sit in Sukkos in Nisan, the 15th of Nisan. But, you know, Pesach. So, we move it off. Till when? Till the only other very, very busy month of the year. Not before, and not later. So what's behind, why is Sukkos in Tishrei? That is the question. And many answers are given, but according to the Rashbam, we understand that if the goal of Sukkos is to remember you were in Sukkos and now you're here, the time to remember that is when your existence in Eretz Yisrael is at its best, when the harvest comes in. You're always sitting in Sukkos. I mean, a real-time commemoration would take 40 years, but the time of year where it's most apt to commemorate it is on Sukkos when the harvest comes in. Aye, you were sitting in Sukkos before, but the goal of the mitzvah is to appreciate the harvest. So Sukkos is commemorated at the time of the harvest. That's the Rashbam's explanation of Sukkos Mamas, just to redeem it, so to speak, from being virtually incomprehensible. Why mark it with the mitzvah of Sukkos? On the other hand, if we move back to Anani HaKavod, which is easier for us to understand that we would celebrate such a thing, after all, it really is quite amazing. But even there, the Mefarshim wonder. When we left Mitzrayim, many special things happened to us. One of them was Anani HaKavod. But there were others. The bread fell from the sky. We had Be'er Shalmir. The three are always mentioned together as a team. The man, the Be'er, and Anani HaKavod. Moshe, Miriam, and Aaron. Somehow, we never find a chag that commemorates the man. We don't have a chag that commemorates Be'er Shel Miriam. But Anani HaKavod, there's a chag. And that's really the question. Man ishtana, this special thing, from all the others. It's a good shaila. And the Chidah answers that the difference between Anani HaKavod and the other two miracles, the man and the be'er, is that food and water in the desert are essential. Shade is not. And therefore, what's unique or distinct about the Anani HaKavod is that for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have laid on a comfort for us, relatively, within the Midbar, that's an expression of love. If you wish to show how much you love someone, you buy them a gift, you don't buy them something that's essential for their survival. You can't say it with a loaf of bread. You say it with flowers, because no one needs flowers. But they're nice, and that's part of the point. And therefore, the idea that's being drawn out and being celebrated in Sukkot is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love for Bnei Yisrael. It's a very, very special chag, if one may say, in that way. And therefore, we remember the expression of that love, which is the Anani HaKavod. And interestingly, this dovetails wonderfully with the comment that is quoted in the name of the Arizal. As we know, the minimum dimensions for a sukkah are 2 and a bit wools. I mean, that's the most accurate way to describe it. 2 and a bit. In the words of the Gemara, Shtayim kil chason, shlishis afilu tefach. 2 complete wools, and then the third wool could even be just like a little bit, just a tefach. Okay. Most sukkahs, of course, have more than that, but one needs to know the halacha, and it's not b'di'evet. It's not b'di'evet. One knows how to do it. It's perfectly fine. What's the significance, one may say, within the 2 full wools and then shlishis afilu tefach? Says the Arizal, Sukkos, it follows on from Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and this is another aspect of that progression, whereby Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, they're days in a sense of din, where we need to excise ourselves from din. Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin. Yom Kippur is also called the Yom HaDin, interestingly. In our tefillahs, we don't call it that, but in the Mishnah Berurah for Yom Kippur, it's referred to as Yom HaDin. And it is, it's the final day of din. We hope for a happy ending, but it's a happy ending to the days of din. Sukkot is a time of chesed, it's when the mood changes greatly. As we know, the directions of right and left are intimately bound up with the concepts of kindness and of justice. The yamin always represents kindness, and the small represents the attribute of justice, is din. Says the Arizal, the Pasuk states in Shir HaShirim, Somolo tachas leroshi, v'yamino techapkeini. Somolo, this is Bnei Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his left hand is under my head, his right hand embraces me. Smolo tachas leroshi, says the Arizal, is Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. There are times of din, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu supports us through the din. Smolo tachas leroshi. And then comes Sukkos. Sukkos is yamino techapkeini. With his right hand, he embraces me. Says Arizal, look at a sukkah. The essential requirements for a sukkah are 2 complete wools, and then the third wool is just a little bit. That is the shape of the arm that embraces. You have the upper bone, the lower bone, and then the hand. Shtayim kil chosom, shlishis afilu tefach. Because that's b'minu techapkeini. It's a fascinating understanding of the dimensions of a sukkah, and further underscores when one sits in a sukkah, one is sitting in the embrace, so to speak, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is provided through the sukkah. That's the chag of Hashem's love for Bnei Yisrael. The sukkahs, as we know, is called Zman Simchaseinu. Every chag is called Zman something. Pesach is Zman Chayruseinu, and Shavuos is Matan Taraseinu. And Sukkos is Zman Simchaseinu. And for some Mefarshim, that's troubling. And the reason why is because Pesach is Zman Chayruseinu, because that's when it happened. And Shavuos is Zman Matan Taraseinu, because that's distinct about Shavuos. To call Sukkos Zman Simchaseinu, it's a time of Simcha, which it is, but so are Pesach and Shavuos. There's a mitzvah of Simcha whenever Yom Tov. So if you highlight or identify a particular moed by something which is true for all other moedim, it sounds like there isn't anything distinct about it. Can that be so? Clearly it isn't. Somehow, as much as every moed is v'samachta b'chagecha, every moed has a mitzvah of Simcha, but Sukkos is on a higher level. A different dimension. So much so that relative to the others, one can refer to it distinctly as Zman Simchaseinu. This is the time of Simcha. But what is it about Sukkot that gives it this edge, so to speak, puts it on this higher tier. And this idea is echoed in the words of the Rambam in the end of Hilchos Lulav. He states, even though he actually formulates this as a sentence, even though every Yom Tov is a time of Simcha, but Sukkos is a Zman Simcha Yaseira. And for the Rambam, that's really the background to the Simcha Beis HaShoeva, these amazing atmosphere of Simcha that existed in the Beis HaMikdash, and from there outwards. But the question still remains. Okay, it's been identified, it's in the Siddur, it's in the Rambam, but what's it all about? What puts Sukkos into its own? And here, Rav Huttner, in the Pachad Yitzchak, explains something that's really an eye-opener. The special days of the year, the Torah days of the year, Yomim Tovim, what's called, are Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur. That's essentially, as Moadim. Those 5 days, of course, do not work together as a group, because actually they're two separate groups. You have the group called Sholosh Regalim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, and then you have the group called Yomim Neroim. Yom Kippur is not one of the Regalim, and Shavuos is not one of the Yomim Neroim. They're two separate sets. Says Rav Huttner, there are two separate sets. Sukkos is the final chag of both of them. It is the final chag of Sholosh Regalim, and it's the final chag of Yomim Noraim. And let us see how that comes to be. There are two mitzvahs that we have on Sukkos, the Arba Minim and the mitzvah of Sukkah. What's the Arba Minim about? Well, again, on one level, it's about gratitude to Hashem. He's brought us to a place of water. He's brought us to a place of sustenance. But the Medrash identifies another theme. Medrash Vayikra Rabba states, it's the well-known words. The two people go into a case. They have a case against each other. So how do you know who's victorious? The one who comes out looking downtrodden, downcast, dejected, is probably lost. The one who comes out waving his weapons, he's the one that won. In the words of the Medrash, Didan Natsach means we won. The mitzvah of Arba Minim, says the Medrash, the taking up of the Arba Minim, mitzvahs are our weapons, and waving them, that is an expression of rejoicing over having successfully gone through Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So the waving of the Arba Minim is saying two things. It's saying thank you for bringing us to Eretz Yisrael, to a place of water, and it's saying thank you for having allowed us to emerge vindicated bedin. Indeed, as we mentioned on other occasions, the waving of the lulav is an act of halal. And that's where we wave lulav in halal. It's mines mino. And the halal is over the fact that we've come through Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. We hope, we're confident that we were successful. So the mitzvah of the Arba Minim is rejoicing over a successful Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And what of Sukkah? What's Sukkah's got to do with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? The Vilna Gaon, in his commentary to Shir HaShirim, who raises the question of the Torah, which again is, why is Sukkah in Tishrei? We take it for granted and we miss the oomph of the question. We sat in Sukkos when we left Mitzrayim, and we push it off, so to speak, for 6 months. Why is Sukkos in Tishrei? Why do we commemorate Sukkos in Tishrei? Says the Vilna Gaon, Sukkos is a commemoration of Anan HaKavod, according to that opinion. When did we receive Anan HaKavod? Well, as soon as we left Mitzrayim, Pasuk says. Yes, we got the Anan HaKavod when we left Mitzrayim, but we lost them. We lost the Anan HaKavod at the time of the Egel. That's when we were demoted, we were in a state of censure, and they went away. But they came back. Because with the Ritzui, with the appeasement and getting back together, of the Shekhinah coming back towards us in the form of the Mishkan, the Anani HaKovid came back. When did that happen? The Golan makes the Cheshbon. The Kapara, the final stage of the Kapara came in Yom Kippur. Salachti Kidvarecha. Moshe comes down the day after Yom Kippur to tell people about the Mishkan. Vayakal Moshe, Rashi says, L'machores Yom HaKippurim. Then, that's the 11th of Tishrei. Then they began to gather materials. How long did that take? Well, the Pasuk says, Heim heviu elav nedava baboker baboker. Now, baboker baboker, in the morning, a repetitious phrase, means, says the Gaon, al derech ha-pshat, 2 mornings. So if they're told about it in the 11th, they began to bring materials on the following 2 mornings, the 12th and the 13th. On the 14th, they realized they had enough. That's when they said the message to stop. And on the 15th, they began to build. And that is when the Anani HaKovod came back. Therefore, says the Vilna Gaon, the timing of our celebration of Anani HaKovod is accurate to the day. Because they came back for good on the 15th of Tishrei. But the amazing point about what the Gaon is saying is that when you consider it, if we're celebrating the Anani HaKovod coming back, we're celebrating the effects and the power of our tshuva to bring them back. I mean, this was the original celebration of a successful Yom Kippur. As per Yom Kippur, Salachti Kidvarecha, the first sign they saw of that was that the Anani HaKovod came back. And therefore the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah as well, which we do, is a celebration of tshuva, well done, and tshuva, and kapara received. So both mitzvahs now actually are celebration of tshuva. And that is why we say that if there are two groups of Yomim Tovim, Shalosh Regalim and Yomim Noraim, Sukkot is the final installment of both of them. It's the final of the three Regalim, and it's the final of the Yomim Noraim. And looked at in that way, Sukkot emerges in a new light because it's actually a double Yom Tov. It is two Yomim Tovim in one. And it's interesting to note that this is reflected, the dual nature of Sukkot is reflected in the Torah itself. One just needs to know where and how to look. The answer will be in Parshas Pinchas, in the Musafim. As we know, the Musafim of Sukkot are very different than of the other Yomim Tovim. Most of the focus, I think, on Sukkot is with regards to Pari HaChag, which are completely unusual, anomalous. They begin with 13, going down to 7, the famous Shivim Pari HaChag. But there's another difference. The Kavosim, the lambs. I think we normally perhaps dull our focus as the korbanos are being read off, possibly. Keep an ear out just in case we're called up for Hagba. But we miss out because the numbers speak. Every Yom Tov there are Shiva Kavosim, that we know. Shiva Kavosim. Every day. On Sukkot there are Arba Esrei Kvasim. There are 14 Kvasim. That is a double amount of Musafim. Twice the amount of every other Chag. Why? Because Sukkot is twice the Chag of every other Chag. You can see it gets almost like a Lecha Mishnah. It's a double portion, Yom Tov-wise, of Musafim because it's a double Yom Tov. And now, all of this has been leading up to a very elegant comment. It's made by one of the great Mechabrim of our times, Rabbi David Cohen, Rosh Hashiva, one of the Rosh Hashivas of Hebron. And what's fascinating is we've been conducting two discussions, and everything's in front of us, and sometimes it takes a great man just to show you exactly what you're looking at. We have seen that there exists a machlokas. When the Torah says, sit in Sukkot, remember that you sat in Sukkot. Okay, what am I remembering? What Sukkot am I commemorating? Machlokas. Two opinions. Some say, Sukkos Mamish. Some say Adonai HaKavod. Okay, it's Machlokus. We've had them before. We've also seen that Sukkos has two identities. It exists in two capacities. It exists as the final regel, and it exists as the final chag of the Yomim Noroim. It's a celebration, Sholosh Regalim based, and it's a celebration of Tshuva also. Says with David Cohen, these two dualities link up. The question is, what are Sukkos? Are they Sukkos Mamish or Anani HaKavod? Can one see both perspectives? Says of David, Sukkos Mamish corresponds to the aspect of Sukkos which is the final regal. As we saw, remember that you sat in Sukkos because you'll appreciate what you have. That's about, it's about the yearly harvest. It's Chag HaAsif. At the time when you bring in the Yavul, remember, you sat in Sukkos Mamish. So the explanation of Sukkos as Sukkos Mamish corresponds to Sukkos as one of the Sholosh Regalim. The explanation of Sukkos as Anani HaKavod corresponds to the second aspect of Sukkos, which is a time of Tshuva, celebrating Tshuva, which as the Vilna Gaon says, Sukkos is when the Anani HaKavod came back. So it turns out that these two machloksim, they are the same. They complement each other. Or they're fused. And moreover, we should know, and it's very interesting just to see the Shleimus Hadovar. Some say, and again, we should note so as not to be less than clear, the Shulchan Aruch says, Sukkos is Zecher Anani HaKavod. That's it. He's taken a sign. However, Mishnah Brura quotes later Poskim, who say that why not have both in mind? After all, if you're dwelling in Sukkos for 7 days, you should have room for more than one thought. And why not? It's again, that's also Hiddur Mitzvah. We can understand that having both in mind isn't just thinking about one thing and thinking about the other, but it's appreciating both aspects of Chag HaSukkos. Where does this notion come from? To have both types of Sukkos in mind? Well, it comes from relatively recent, post Shulchan Aruch, but it's alluded to by the Torah. The Torah says, again, this is in the end of Perek Kaf Gimel of Vayikra, Parshas Emor. Basukos teishu shivas yomim. Shall dwell in Sukkos for 7 days. Kol ezrach b'Yisrael, yesh b'basukos. Everyone in Yisrael shall sit in Sukkos. Why? Leman yedu derosechem, ki basukos hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael. The word basukos is written 3 times in that pasuk. Basukos teishu, yesh b'basukos, leman yedu derosechem, ki basukos hoshavti. 3 times. But they're not the same. If you look in a Sefer Torah, you will see that the first 2 times the word basukos is written without a vav at the end, what's called chaser. Samach vav kaf taf, without a second vav. The 3rd time, when it says basukos of shavti, it's written male with a vav at the end. Now the word is read exactly the same. There are halachic discussions about though. What to make of the fact that it's written sometimes chaser, sometimes male, it's Gemara in Sanhedrin, Dorshim Tchilos. But says the Torah to Mima in the Sefer Baruch Sha'omar, the difference between the various mentionings of the word basukos is that the first 2 times the Torah is telling you to sit in Sukkos, and the 3rd time it's saying, remember the Sukkos that you sat in. When the word is written chaser, Sukkos, it's read Sukkos because there are many Sukkos. But there are already one. There's only one type of Sukkah, really. Tachlis, halachically, there's only one type of Sukkah. That's okay. And you sit in that Sukkah. It's written chaser because there's only one type of Sukkah you're going to build, the Sukkah that everyone's familiar with. There are variations on the theme, but... So when the Torah tells you to sit in the Sukkah, it mentions it in the singular. There's only one type of Sukkah. But then it says, but remember that you sat in Sukkos. And when it talks about the Sukkos, you're remembering it's written Malay. To tell you, and you're remembering in your one Sukkah, remember two sukkahs. Remember sukkahs mamash, and remember hanane hakavod, because each one sheds light on the nature of the chag. It's fascinating. It begins as a machlokas, as a pitch battle between two tanoim, and throughout the generations people take sides. Someone in the acharonim says maybe there's room for both, and that brings you back to the pasuk. And the pasuk has been saying, yes, there is room for both. And this explains to us why, if every Yom Tov is a time of Simcha, the double Yom Tov of Sukkot, doubly so. And that's why of Sukkot we say, Zman Simchaseinu, V'karei Shemo B'Yisrael, Zman Simchaseinu, because it completely comes into its own. And I think it's fair to say, in terms of connecting us with the meaning of Chag HaSukkos, the original Sukkot is for the Jewish people. Sukkos Mamash to appreciate what they have. Anane HaKovah to appreciate their tshuva. Our Hidur Mitzvah is to have that personal appreciation as we sit in our Sukkah. Baruch Hashem, we have what to be appreciative for. And we have our own tshuva that we've been through. And that really brings the Sukkah to us. And that's the shleimus of sitting in the Sukkah. I wish you all a Chag Sameach. Just mention, our next year will be the 20th of October will be the Monday of Parshas Noach. Parshas Bereishis. We left our own devices.